Good morning. Today is Wednesday, March the 3rd. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County Supervisor in the 5th District, Steve Madrone. Good morning, sir.
Good morning from the great and wonderful North Humboldt 5th District.
Yes, where you still can get there driving on Highway 101.
There you go. Don't go any further, though, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Don't expect to come home if you go to Crescent City.
The long way around. Might even be quicker to take a boat.
Yeah.
How's that for bizarre?
And then, of course, people use their GPS and try to go up over the GORAG.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah. That's a whole nightmare. And I don't think we can. Is United puddle jumping into? I don't think they're into. They're flying into McNamara anymore. I think that stopped.
Right.
Yeah. So we can't even take a puddle jumper over. Anyway. All right. Ever wonder why that painfully tender spot at the tip of the elbow is called the funny bone?
It's certainly not very funny when you hit it.
True.
I don't know.
All right. Actually, the funny bone is not a bone at all, but a nerve. It's the ulnar nerve, which runs along a shallow groove in the ulna, the larger of the two forearm bones. The nerve gets very close to the surface at the tip of the elbow, and when it's struck there, it causes a sharp, shocking pain in the arm and hand. For a while, many people thought that the pain was caused by striking the upper arm bone, and since the medical name for the bone is humerus, someone decided it would be amusing to refer to it as the humerus, or funny bone.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, nothing like medical humor, huh?
I don't know. I'll take the femur.
Yeah, exactly.
I could say I'll take the fifth.
Yeah.
I'm in the fifth. So
there you go. Take it and go home, right? Yeah. A lot of discussion around the broadband, the wire that's being laid in across the Pacific, and with some of the businesses that are locating and growing in Arcata right now. I know the old Copeland Lumber, or I guess it was Nielsen Feed in the most recent version. There's a lot of stuff going on there. Greg Foster has talked about some of the different opportunities that are going on. What is the county doing? Is there a hedging, an expectation? Is there anything that the county can do other than get out of the way to help make this happen and facilitate its arrival?
Yeah, get out of the way. I think that's probably the operative two words, or three words, I guess that is. My understanding is that it's coming. It's going to land here, at Redland Marine Terminal 1, coming from Indonesia, where the closest spot poking out into the ocean to the west. And it's going to be the fastest possible internet available on the planet, you know, et cetera. So quite an amazing thing. And I believe what they're doing in Arcata that you mentioned is the digital center for this all to kind of arrive at and then be utilized out of and stuff. So I don't know all the details, but sounds pretty exciting along with what's happening locally.
Is the county, is economic development involved with that? Is there a special task force, an advisory? Is there anything, or is this private-public partnership that the county isn't having to get involved with, other than land use, if that might come to surface?
Yeah, I haven't heard much at my end, countywide, as far as us being involved at all. I mean, it's coming in, to the West Coast and immediately entering Harbor District facilities and property, so they're the ones that are working with them to bring it on board. I don't know all the other details to it. I assume that when you lay line, you've got to, get certain permits for that, but it's not like trying to permit other types of big facilities. I don't think it's super complicated.
Yeah.
From what I understand.
And the physicalness of it isn't huge either, so it's not like,
right,
you got to dig a 12-foot trench or anything like that. One of the challenges, obviously, is working with that and then how to maximize the opportunity that Humboldt County has once this thing gets here. Other than employment, and Greg Foster has spent a little time talking about, along where the cable is being run, if those communities don't already have service to be able to run some spurs off of it. What do you think is going to be the big benefit for the county?
Well, I think, you know, being that it's going to be the best line happening anywhere and coming right into us, it clearly is going to provide all kinds of opportunity for benefit. You know, one of them would be, for instance, you take a look at the airport, you know, the Arcata Eureka Airport, California Redwood Coast, whatever the long name is nowadays.
ACV.
yeah, that's how I use ACV. At any rate, there is a business park there that has been languishing, and it's fully permitted to be able to do some things like light tech. So imagine if we had a big, nice light tech center there at the Airport Business Park, and those folks in Palo Alto and the Bay Area, they come up twice, you know, once a year for a retreat for 2 weeks and work out of this digital center here at the airport and get to, you know, recreate in our areas, go to the beaches, the trails, et cetera, the rivers. You know, there's one opportunity that it certainly could create some interesting development there at the airport in regards to vacant property, fully permitted to go, et cetera. And then, of course, with Digital 299 and the 96 line coming down over Bald Hills, we're going to have a lot more fiber coming in this summer, apparently. And then we have a lot of fiber already laid to all the schools all over Humboldt County that nobody can do a turnout on. You can't access it because when the Public Utilities Commission set up that program, they were providing grants, public funds to these various carriers to lay the line, and they weren't allowed to do any turnouts for some period of time. I think it's 10 years or something. And so now with everybody working from home, the kids doing school, I don't think we'll ever go back to completely moving away from this transition we've made of, you know, the home being so much more important for communication purposes. And so, you know, a simple change at the Public Utilities Commission to allow for that existing fiber that's already laid all over our communities to these rural schools, if we could allow for turnouts off that immediately, where the companies wouldn't make any profit off of it, but they'd break even, that would be a change that could happen very quickly.
Now, is there a groundswell for that to occur?
It's growing. I would say there's been a shakeup, a tsunami called COVID. And the waves are spreading out across the ocean, and they haven't reached shore yet where they build. But that's coming, and yes, the momentum is growing.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19. We'll be back with more from Steve Madrone.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County Supervisor Steve Madrone. Steve, with the digital that is coming into the area, has there been any movement? And I know the industrial park at the airport is something that's out there, but is the county also making allowances and thinking, well, we may not need to have as many buildings. We may not need to have as many people inside of the courthouse. We may be able to do a lot of this work remotely, or conversely, have a legitimate, I guess you call it an offsite office or annex in Fortuna, in Garberville, in Blue Lake, in McKinleyville that would be much more connected than what might have been thought of in the past.
Yes, I think that there is a lot of looking at that, at the opportunities. You know, there's some bright spots here to COVID, right? And that's part of it is that we've kind of had to explore and discover new ways of doing business and being able to get our work done. And I know for myself, I'm saving 2 hours a day in transportation time, let alone the gas and the rest of it, and that just gets converted right into work, you know. So I find myself to be very productive from home. I've got good internet, good phone service, and the like. So it's going to vary, you know, by position, by departments, by agencies. But I do think that this has really created a great opportunity for people to kind of revisit this subject, to take a look at it. You know, if there are ways that people can be as productive or even more productive, why wouldn't we want to try and support that? I mean, there's always the issue of accountability, et cetera, but, you know, that's easily accomplished by looking at, you know, what's being produced, what's going on. You don't have to watch people every second to know whether they're putting in their 8 hours and being productive or not. So I hope that we continue to grow in thinking about how that might rearrange our future, take advantage of those things.
Well, you know, there's certain areas that I would like to suggest never will be. For example, submitting planning reports. I mean, you could digitalize it, but I think it's probably a lot more productive if you got somebody across the counter asking questions
yes.
back and forth. Okay, so if we set those areas apart, with the additional dollars that the state is kicking down and that the county is receiving that was unanticipated through the budget process, is it finally time to get all departments, and I know the electeds are kind of a set aside on this one, but to get all appointed department heads and departments all on the same platform, all using the same programs, all being able to interconnect and access so that we don't have some of these challenges that we keep hearing about over the last 6 to 8 months of somebody not doing this or somebody ignoring that or somebody not being aware of something else,
right.
and just make it all the same.
Well, there's certainly a lot to be said for the opportunities that exist here. You know, if it wasn't for this pandemic, we wouldn't really be visiting a lot of this subject matter. And so in these kinds of things, it's always important to look at the opportunity side. It's, they say that Chinese card on one side is catastrophe and the other side is opportunity. You know, and that's what we have here. We have a great opportunity to rethink how we're doing things and to reinvent ourselves. I mean, I notice that when I come by your office, you don't shake my hand anymore. You just bow to me in the, you know, nice little folded hands. And
but well, that's because you bring food all the time. I'm actually going for the food plate there, and you just kind of pull it out from under me.
Oh, that's what it was.
Yeah, yeah.
At any rate, you know, I just do think that we're not going back on a lot of stuff. I think things are going to change. I mean, it might be that we realize when flu season's really gnarly that maybe we've been pretty darn lax about disease for a long time. And when certain things are happening, I'm not saying shut the schools down again, please. You know, folks, I'm all for opening the schools and getting kids back to sports and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, there are times where maybe certain kinds of precautions are appropriate to try and prevent the spread of disease and illness. And, you know, part of that, I think, firmly, is this thing called sick leave. You know, it rarely was provided in the past. I think there's some new laws that now say you got to give everybody at least one day a month or something, the sick leave laws. But, you know, if you look at it, what happens, the reason so much disease spreads around is because people don't have sick leave. They can't afford to take the day off, right? So the kid's sick, but they can't afford to stay home with the kid, so they give them some DayQuil and send them to school full of, you know, viruses and disease and bacteria, whatever. And so, you know, if we were able to help people be able to stay at home when they're sick, then that would go a long ways towards helping to prevent future problems and such.
Well, it's the county looking at, and I know we've talked about trying to have a comprehensive plan and that there are those that have worked on it. But with all the buildings and all of the upkeep and all the ADA and all of the various costs associated with having buildings all over the place, I mean, if a third of your work staff could be punching it out at home, boy, I would think that there was a lot of surplus property and a lot of opportunity just to kind of get the county out of the renting business or leasing business or property ownership, get those things on the private side and start getting some taxes from those things. Is there any thoughts in that direction at all or any discussions? I mean, it's been a year now. Is anybody kind of starting to think that maybe these lessons learned we can leverage into some ongoing annual savings?
Well, I certainly see some bright opportunities and people starting to talk about these things. I don't think a lot of progress has been made yet because we've all just been kind of under the gun and trying to deal with the day-to-day and what is it right now, vaccines, how do we get the vaccines out, you know, the rest of it. But there's a lot of room for discussion and creativity in that arena that you're talking about. I, for one, think that it's, you know, a great opportunity to start reinventing ourselves and thinking about how to be more productive. And frankly, private-public partnerships have always been one of the best ways to improve how we deliver services and how we engage our communities.
And we'll talk about some of those additional opportunities when we come back. It's 8:30.
Hey, community. Times are rough right now. Retail shops may be closing, but the bulk flower market is still open and moving fast. We here at Bayer can help turn your flower harvest into cash today. Call Bayer Extraction House at 707-693-2222. That's 707-693-2222. Don't miss out. It is time to sell. Bayer Extraction House, your flower selling powerhouse.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County Supervisor Steve Madrone. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, Humboldt Termite Pest Control, Murphy's Markets, and Baywood Golf and Country Club. Steve, considering some of those additional opportunities that you were alluding to before the break, are you getting a willingness from department heads? Are they coming to the supervisors saying, you know, I think I can do or we can do da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Here's what the initial front load cost is, but here's what I think we'll be able to benefit from. Is anybody kind of starting to put those words out there now?
Well, it's funny you should ask, because a couple of months ago I was asking that our department heads come to the board sooner on the budget discussions and actually have a chance for the board to engage the department heads on a more thorough discussion of opportunities and innovations and all that stuff versus, you know, what typically happens is we get a budget that comes to us from a department that's pretty much like the last year, other than they either go up 3% or down 3% or stay even. But there's not a lot of innovation and a lot of change in that proposal. And I just thought, as a board member, I would very much like to engage in a deeper discussion about how we might be able to use the existing resources we have in a more effective manner. So I pushed for that, but with COVID and everything everybody's been dealing with, there was a request to maybe wait till next year to have that. So I'm going to keep pushing for that and hope that we can bring those discussions to the table earlier and not just do a rote process of redoing the same thing we did before, but really being innovative, looking at creatively how we can do a better job with the same resources, because I think there's a lot of opportunity, like I said, in that public-private partnership arena in particular.
Well, yeah, you got that, but just, you know, maybe, like you were saying, if you don't have to pay the electrical costs or the roofing costs or the maintenance costs on some of these buildings, and okay, maybe it's only a one-time send-back for, let's say, $250,000 in the general fund. Okay, and let's say that that's good, but it's not, you know, it's not going to make life suddenly wonderful. But it's ongoing costs associated with that.
Oh, yeah.
That is, I think, the opportunity to save and then focus your monies into those buildings that you do have that do need
or could
benefit. And all of a sudden, now you start the wheels rolling in a positive way instead of kind of treading water.
You bet. A good example of that, up in Redwood Creek, you know, we've got some levees that were put in after the 1964 flood. And they've never really functioned very well. They kind of killed off the salmon population. And they don't prevent all flooding. They actually are creating lots of flooding problems for some of the ranchers that live down there, you know, near the mouth of Redwood Creek. And so the county worked with a bunch of consultants and agencies, and we put together a big plan back in 2014 of how to fix some things. But the landowners felt like they weren't really part of the process very well, right? And so we backed up, and we brought the landowners to the table. And now we're engaged in a stakeholder group where the landowners are absolutely at the table. Their needs and interests are being considered directly, And we're finally coming to a place where it looks like we might be able to implement a project up there that will benefit the ranchers, reduce some flooding, while also enhancing the salmon habitat in the estuary of Lower Redwood Creek. So there's a great example of where, you know, when we do our job as government well, that looks like reaching out to landowners in the private sector and engaging them as stakeholders and saying, what do you think will work? What will work for you? And then we can explain some of the other biological pieces that we need to work on. And, you know, we find an intersection of interest there, and we've got a project. We've got stuff moving forward, you know. So I love that kind of work. That's really what keeps me going every day, is finding that way to work with the private sector, you know, and make things happen.
So what other areas, I mean, when we were talking about the data stuff earlier, I'm thinking the industrial park. Okay, Steve Mosier or whoever now owns that development. You've got both sides of the building there. When you were saying, you know, have maybe Amazon do a retreat here one week a year, I'm thinking, why not have them come here and they can do their retreat down in San Jose once a year? You know, and really start to, if this thing is as advertised, and I don't suspect that it's not, really jumpstart this thing, take the opportunity by the horns and try to get some of these guys who have talked about quality of life, now that the infrastructure's here, bring them in.
Absolutely. Yeah, McKinleyville's going to change a lot over the next 10, 20 years. I mean, it's already changed tremendously in the last 20 years.
Right.
But mostly that's been building a bedroom community. And folks are now realizing that as a bedroom community, it's hard to incorporate and be your own city. So, you know, here the county is trying to run a city up there. And when the results of the new, census come out, I'm sure McKinleyville will be number two, you know, in the county as far as size and population. And so, you know, you're looking at that, and you got all these visitors going up Highway 101, but they're not going into McKinleyville. And McKinleyville in no way really tries to tap the tourism industry. So, you know, with this airport business park filling out, which we believe will happen as soon as we build that Vista Point Park and make that Vista Point facility easily accessible from north or south off of Airport Road, you know, and then you have a visitor center there, suddenly people are looking, well, where do we stay the night? Well, there's only one motel in McKinleyville. So all of a sudden there's pressure for more motels. And then the rest of the business park fills out with light tech and other kinds of business activity. The town center process is coming along with a new ordinance out there behind Safeway that's going to create this pedestrian-friendly, attractive, park-like environment with mixed-use development and such. And then, you know, all of these things combining together, we start pulling people off the highway. And that's going to be good for business on many, many levels.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Steve Madrone. Steve, one of the challenges is, as you're looking at potential, and certainly McKinleyville's got a lot of potential, land use planning, and we heard a lot of that, and it's kind of gets into like the Charlie Brown teacher discussion being received. You know, wah, 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 and nobody pays any attention. But there is an awful lot of ag land that is out there. So as there's more interest in McKinleyville, more interest in more homes, more interest, more homes, less opportunity for ag. Does the county have a firm plan, or the services district have a firm plan in those interface areas between the county and the service district about ag, and whether it's going to be the blueberries or the goats or cows or cattle? Is there anything that's kind of locked down, or is that still fairly nebulous?
No, it's pretty locked down. You know, the service district in McKinleyville does an incredible job, great group of people covering lots of bases, but they're limited in how big they can get by the pipelines that have to go from the Central Avenue, you know, the eastern half, the central half of McKinleyville, across the freeway to the sewage treatment facility. right? So you're limited by the pipes that run across those freeway bridges or go underground. And that has always been the big constraint there on growth. So, you know, where they will provide sewer is limited. There was a development up Murray Road, Beaupre Estates, up behind the golf course that had been projected to be pretty high density, but that would have been if they had sewer and water. And the service district has said, we can't provide sewer, but we will provide water. You know, there's plenty of water in the Mad River, and they're looking for more customers since the pulp mills shut down. But the sewer is the constraint, and that is not being taken out to Dow's Prairie or even up Murray Road very far. So there is a constraint on that.
Now, you mentioned water. What about the discussion about running the water line up to Trinidad? That seems to be a real logical thing and would allow West Haven and Trinidad to really kind of develop out. And granted, Trinidad is its own city, so you know that might not be an area you can weigh in on. But certainly the surrounding areas are. Is that something you see is going to be an economic stimulant also if it does come to pass?
Well, it certainly would be. I mean, when you bring in water and you deal with sewer, you can grow a lot more. But as you know, both West Haven and the city of Trinidad have both said no to participating in that waterline extension. It's been looked at every 10 years for the last 40 years, and every time it's been looked at, it was too expensive, and more importantly, the community didn't want the growth-inducing element that unlimited water represents. So even without sewer, just increasing water capacity can cause increased density and development. And it's interesting because in Trinidad, you know, you've got a situation where about a fourth of the town is short-term rentals, and then another two-fourths or another half of the town that were long-term residents moved out because they no longer had neighborhoods. They had, you know, party houses next door with right. short-term rental people coming in that weren't very respectful. And a lot of the managers aren't, you know, readily available, like in a bed and breakfast where they live on site or something. And so that created a lot of problems in town, and basically the community has kind of turned over, and properties are so expensive, you've got a lot of fairly wealthy folks moving in. And, you know, good folks, welcome to the community, but they immediately think, well, why wouldn't we want to bring that water line up here, right? And
right.
And I say to them, I say, well, what was it that attracted you to Trinidad in the first place? And they immediately say, oh, the lack of development, the rustic character, that, you know, it's unlike any other coastal town in California.
The view, the view.
The view, all of it, right?
Holy
and
cow.
It's like,
yeah.
Okay, so that's what attracted you. And do you understand if we brought a water pipeline with unlimited water, that would no longer be the case? It would change, you know, dramatically. And they're like, oh, I hadn't thought about that. You know, so,
gotcha. Well,
what we're trying to do.
The education will continue then. Always seems to be there.
It will.
Thanks for coming by this morning.
Thank you.
All right.
Take care.
Talk to you in a while. Thanks, Steve. Bye-bye. See everybody tomorrow. Bye-bye.